Welcome to the May My Care Alliance podcast. This month, we're going to talk about navigating cancer care. My name is Anne Llewellyn, and I'll be your host and moderator. Being diagnosed with cancer is a blow to everyone. Today, there are people in place to help you and your family when you hear the words you have cancer. Due to early detection and novel protocols for all cancers, being told you have cancer is not like receiving a death sentence. Today, cancer is curable, and if not curable, containable. Having a good oncology team is important, and having an advocate help you and your family battle the disease, understand your options, and help you through the challenges you face will make the battle easier. Today, we're joined by two professionals who will share their expertise and insights into the topic of cancer navigation. First, I would like to welcome Ginger Jones, who is the CEO and one of the co-founders of My Care Alliance. Ginger, welcome. Tell us a little bit about what's happening at My Care Alliance.
Thank you. There's a lot of exciting stuff going on with My Care Alliance as people are starting to get back to a little bit of normal as COVID is becoming less of a crisis. So we are expanding our membership and really starting to get a lot more people interested in our podcast and webinars and smart business articles, which we do for the benefit of all of our members. Our members are consist of advocates, care managers, home care companies, and adult daycare companies. We meet the needs of all those companies, and our membership is where we like to start and bringing some value so we can meet them where they're at. So we have some educational programs, and then we have a blend of technology and software and services to help them run their businesses. So we're off to a great start in 2021, and we're excited to have our guest with us today. And I'm going to let you introduce Leanne.
Thanks. Yes, we do have Leanne Biafora, who is an oncology nurse, certified case manager, registered nurse, master's prepared, and co-founder of Beacon Oncology Nurse Advocates, also known as Beacon Advocates. Leanne's going to share some information that will help advocates know how to help their clients and families cope when you hear the words, you have cancer. Leanne, tell us a little bit about yourself and welcome to the My Care Alliance podcast.
Well, thank you, Anne, and thank you, Ginger, for being a gracious host and for having me. So I have been an oncology nurse for 30 years, and I had worked in case management. I worked in a lot of different places in cancer, Miami, Florida, Massachusetts, at one of the top leading research institutes at Dana-Farber and Brigham and Women's Hospital. I've also worked in New York City and Atlanta, Georgia. And through all of this journey that I find that we all are on in our career, I really found that there was a lot of issues in the system, mainly making sure that individuals were getting the right care at the right time. Over the years, I worked in case management, I worked in clinical trials, I worked in infusion, I worked in designing pathway programs, I even worked in insurance and designing care management programs and doing a lot of analytics and population, and really got excited about the fact that there is just a way to understand, a level of understanding and opportunities for nurses. You know, we are, as nurses, we are a line item. We're not a billable code often. You know, we're seeing some movement in that, which is exciting. But for me, I wanted to, I saw the issues like we all do. It's a system issue. And I wanted to start and help individuals navigate this complex system. There's distinct silos from whether you work in as a nurse in case management in an insurance company or at a facility or in various different facilities, and you each have different roles, right? There's no standardization around them. And often the patients are left, you know, they're like a round hole trying to fit into a square, you know, a square peg or square piece. And it's just a really unfortunate situation. So 9 years ago, I started a company. Now I'm in St. Petersburg, Florida. And I started the company with the intent to, you know, help design a concierge service. At the time, the market was not ready for it, especially in Florida, in our area. And I had an opportunity, you know, after I tried that for a little bit, I kept the business open, but I went and worked for a large national healthcare plan as a clinical strategist in cancer, and continued to build a lot of value-based programs. So value-based, where you're measuring, people are getting paid by improving the coordination of care, or improving better outcomes. And that's what I've been committed to since I started this journey of nursing and caring for patients. Let me step back for a second. I started nursing, focusing on my master's in nursing, and switched over to healthcare administration after a dean of a nursing program said, Leanne, you're real systems approach. You know, you're not just a focus on the patient, you're focusing on the system and how to improve the system. So she encouraged me to focus on healthcare administration, which I finished up. And I did my my internship with the Institute for Healthcare Improvement with Don Berwick, who is really a leader of the improving, you know, identifying the issues from a systems perspective and really putting into play measurements, you know, implementing measurements to really to impact change. And it's a systematic approach. So I was really jazzed. It's always jazzed me. I get so excited about quality and the power of the data. So when I started this business, fast forward, I started the business 9 years ago. You know, the market wasn't ready. Went to work at Humana, a large payer, and kept my business open, but didn't really, you know, I had my shingle up, but I didn't really do any marketing and so forth. But, you know, I was always very open about and transparent about my role and what I was doing on the side. And then as I was, you know, value-based care was really becoming forefront, especially in cancer care. There was an oncology care model that was implemented starting in 2015. And it was all about coordination of care, right? It was how we're going to reduce money but it was all care coordination activities. And I was so floored that it was driven by physicians, right? But nurses and others, social workers and others in the team, they weren't really highlighted, and it really wasn't a nurse. To me, it just seemed like there was a gap. Right? There should have been a nurse leadership should have been taking hold of that. And, you know, nothing, no disrespect to our fellow colleagues, our physician colleagues. It's just, I'm tired of seeing physicians who are fantastic at their craft and in their science, but nurses and others do a lot of the coordination of care. And they're always the folks that really take care of the issues, right? The coordination of care, the continuum of care. And I made a decision that I was going to go back to really go back to Beacon and expand it so we can come up with a scalable solution. There's no scalable solution. Everything's in silos still. And we need to address the holistic patient, right? The whole patient. We need to deal with, but we need to come at it from a different angle than it currently is. The system doesn't promote that. So when we engage in a case, we understand what's important to the patient. We understand what their journey is. We try to bring all of their history. We try to understand it very quickly because that's utilizing the nursing process. And then we assess quickly. We get their medical records. We review them. We prioritize their issues. And then go to work. So it's really focused on, you know, bridging those gaps in care identifying anything, improving that clinical experience, that clinical outcomes, most important, right? Getting the right care at the right time, reducing avoidable care or voice of the financial outcomes. So we're going to reduce that avoidable care. Keeping people out of the emergency room has always been, you know, top of mind for many payers. And that is absolutely the most critical, but it's also about being proactive, right? We're being proactive and we're utilizing our oncology experience to know what questions to ask, when to ask them, and when to call the physicians and others. So what makes our company unique is that we're independent. And that's really what I believe is the most important piece to be able to impact change.
I so agree with you, Leanne, and I like how you say it's a system problem because it's really the system. I think we have, and I remember Don Berwick saying this, we have really good clinicians, we have good physicians who really try to do the best they can, the nurses trying to do the best they can, all the members of the healthcare team, but the system is so rigid that it doesn't allow collaboration. It doesn't allow communication, which are the key things that help people, the patient, understand what's happening with them so they can participate in their care. Mm-hmm. Understanding what is happening. I mean, we do this in any other aspect of our life. If you buy a house, you do research to find out if the house is a good deal, if there's damage to the house that you need to know about before you get an inspection, before you buy a house. You buy a car, you go through a whole process to make sure you're getting the best car for the price. And what are the deals out there and how can I get one? But in healthcare, we don't really do that. And I think you're right with value-based purchasing coming into play right now. That is changing the system. Mm-hmm. And it's opening the door for people like you in oncology, advocates in oncology, as well as other advocates across the spectrum. Mm-hmm. Think about the patient who has diabetes. Think about the patient who has heart failure. All those conditions are manageable mm-hmm. if the patient understands what they need to do. Mm-hmm. If they don't know what to do, they can't do it. They don't know what they don't know. And then they get duplicative care. They go around just searching for people to help them. Mm-hmm. And nobody stops and listens. Like you're saying, stop and listen. What are the patient's goals? What do they want to happen? Maybe they don't even want chemo. Maybe they're tired. They're 85 years old, you know? So one thing I'd like, just if you can give us a little update on where you think cancer is today. Mm-hmm. I said it is a curable disease. Sometimes cures can happen, but if it isn't curable, it's at least manageable. I look at cancer today as a chronic condition with things are going to happen along the way. But if we're managed well, have good care, we can overcome some of those things and lead and have a good quality of life. So where do you see cancer today as far as statistics? Are we still getting our numbers high or where are we today with cancer?
Well, let's see. Well, 1 in 3 will have a cancer, 1 in 4 will have a cancer diagnosis in a lifetime, right? So aging is the number one risk. There's certain cancers that, you know, genetics, let's just take, for instance, breast cancer. You know, people always, including myself, we always think, oh, well, if you don't have a genetic predisposition, you're not going to get it. Well, let me tell you, for breast cancer, 15% are the ones that, only 15% have a genetic connection to breast cancer. Others, 68% or more, you know, it changes. So I think the most important thing is that we are seeing younger people getting cancer, colon cancer. We've just seen the American Cancer Society change and others, other you know leading agencies and associations change their guidelines to 45 for screening for colon cancer because they're seeing an uptake in younger people, right? And we're also seeing a lot of healthcare, especially in light of COVID, which we'll get to in a second, but in light of COVID and all of the racial and health inequities that have been, you know, bubbling and being exposed over this course of the year and a half, it has really shown, unfortunately, how devastating health inequities, especially in cancer care, is happening. I've known it for many years, and I hope that we are going to be a part of that solution and really kind of bridging gaps to access of cancer care. You know, women, just in going back to the breast cancer, African-American women or Black women who get cancer, breast cancer, they will likely die from it. They're over, you know, almost 50% likely that they're going to die. They have a, they're typically not early detection. They also happen to have a triple negative breast cancer, a special type that is hard to treat. So then you have late detection and diagnosis to the fact that they may not be treated equally, right? Because they may not have the right insurance. Then that becomes all of these things that these are factors that don't promote a positive outcome. So that, you know, I do that separately in my work with American Cancer Society, but I am very passionate about improving healthcare access to healthcare. Now, of course, I say that, right, for all the other nurses. I mean, I charge for my services, and I'm happy to charge with my services because we need to, as nurses, we need to show our value, and we need to be able to get paid for that, right? And not only that, but I'm trying to not only get paid for it, but I want to show by, as we grow our business, we'll be able to give back in a larger population once we are successful, or at least the way I envision it, as long as I'm able to be successful in my scaling this business and making it much more accessible so we can get more impact. Then I think we'll get a billable code, and then we'll get a demonstration project, and we'll be able to show our value. So it is not even a question.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right with that. Advocates, just the term advocate itself, maybe sometimes lends to volunteer, mm-hmm. which we're not volunteers. We are, this is your business. So mm-hmm. there is a cost of business that has to be covered. But I think part of what you said was the prevention, getting in for, especially during COVID, a lot of people didn't want to go to the doctors during COVID or even get any of their tests. So we kind of lost a year here. Mm-hmm. And how would you encourage people to get back on track with annual checkups and, you know, things like that?
Well, I think it's critical that folks get back to their annual exams and also their age appropriate screenings. We have seen, and the numbers are staggering, that 80% in breast cancer screenings were down last year, and 90% of colon cancer, you know, screenings for colon cancer were down. So it's a real issue. It's going to have tremendous impact this year, and others. Because people hadn't got their, you know, if you get diagnosed early on, you're going to have much more chance of survivor, you know, it'll be a survivorship issue and a chronic illness versus, you know, stage four makes it harder to treat. There's not as much you can do. And that's what I'm seeing, unfortunately. Every single case I have is stage four.
And the treatment is much more harsh.
Yes.
Than if you caught it early. So that's a good reminder. Maybe it's on the negative side, but if you really want to avoid the hazards of cancer, which is harsh chemotherapy and pain and suffering, get your early detection, get your screens done. And let's all commit to do that today. To think about, have I had my mammogram? Have I had my colonoscopy? Have I had, if I'm a man, a prostate exam with PSA tests? call your doctors up and make those appointments. So that's an important part of prevention and catching, like you said, diagnosing cancer early so it can be managed instead of a terminal condition.
A lot of our listeners today are much like you. They're running their own businesses and doing care management or advocacy, but not all of them are experts in cancer care. And I think cancer is really a very unique field. I'm a nurse and have a very long background in cardiopulmonary, and I've done care management and life care planning for spinal cord injuries and brain injuries, and feel very well versed in the treatments and resources for that, but not so much in resources for helping the client through cancer. Can you talk to us about, it's kind of a two-part question. Mm-hmm. One, for people that are working with clients that end up with a cancer diagnosis, what are some ways that and resources they can refer to give them the best support possible? And then at what point do you recommend maybe collaborating with somebody like you that has a deeper breadth of resources available?
Right. Thank you for that question. So I think the most
Ginger, you jumped. Ginger, Leanne, I just want to, it's funny, but we're all on the same page here. That was my next question, to talk about cancer care navigation and why it's important for advocates as well as for the consumer. So
yeah, go ahead. Well, I think it's important that let's step back for this. Let's just talk about what's going on in cancer space right now. You know, genomics, or the way the genetic makeup of tumors, right, has, and that information, that blueprint, if you will, is giving way, making the way, and expanding survivorship. So I'll give you an example. I had a client 2 years ago that had metastatic cancer all over, renal cancer. And fortunately, he was in a clinical trial with a new drug after he got his genetic testing done. And it's not the familial, like what your parents give you. It's the actual testing of the tumor. And within that, he had a marker, so he was able to get on a clinical trial. And clinical trials are underutilized, by the way. Less than 4% of people get into a clinical trial in the country. It's even worse with, obviously, with the underrepresented. And I can go on. We could do a whole case on that. We could do a whole another session on that, because I'm very passionate about that. But most important, as far as the genetics is concerned, there's so much movement going on in research. So for someone that's not, you know, aware of it, they won't be able to, if they don't know how to, you know, do the research, ask the right questions, know where to look. That's really like, that right there alone is so critical for a patient to survive in this day. Now, the problem is that the physicians, as well attended as, you know, intended as they are, they're often very, I almost liken it to a blinders, you know, they're so focused what's in front of them. The teams are being asked to do too much, and they don't have the time to go and focus on that individual patient and where to look for clinical trials to go and ask. Because, you know, people refer to, you know, Dr. Google, right? And it just becomes, you want to look and you want to ask meaningful questions. So you're not wasting the physician's time that they make, you're not wasting the patient's time as well. So that's, I think that's really critical. I think of anything, genetics is such, it's really the key of the future of improving cancer care outcomes. So as far as the resources, you know, I think that connecting with some of these nonprofits that have those scientists that will be able to help them. There's Cancer Commons is one of them. And then there's also a number of new clinical trial sites, like, let's see, I'm trying to think of it. I can't remember. There's like four of them, but you go and you put it, your questions like an algorithm, and you put your genetic information in it, and it will start, you know, it has a decision tree, and it will guide you to some clinical trials that might or might not work, be appropriate, because I've seen some that are not appropriate. So you have to be very careful about using those. The technology is amazing, but I don't think it's quite ready yet. But the scientists and the people that work in that field are the most critical.
Are you talking about somebody that's already been diagnosed with cancer doing this clinical trial?
Yeah. Okay. I'm talking about anybody with a cancer diagnosis should have their genetics or have that conversation if it's appropriate. So for instance, I have a small cell cancer case. That's not necessarily going to always benefit in that genetic sequencing, from what I understand, and that will likely change over time. But there are certain cancers that you really want to look at what mark their biomarkers. So there's, and when I say that, so let's say there's a biomarker, so EGFR, right? They're on along the chain. Well, there may be a drug or a drug that may be good or it may not be good for that particular cancer. So colon cancer, for instance, sometimes there's issues with those biomarkers. Does that make sense?
So how would another advocate go about getting their client into a trial or even know what's available out there?
Right. Well, I think that's where the expertise comes in, right? I would always ask that question. I would probably, if I were a non-cancer focused person coming into a case with a cancer case, I would ask and start reading everything I could on that case, on that diagnosis and what's going on recently. I get 20 different scientific journal articles a day. And I'm working on developing an IT system eventually that will bring and synthesize a lot of that information to make it at our fingertips a lot easier. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot going on. But now, that said, you could also go to specific cancer organizations. So for instance, you know, American Cancer Society is fantastic. The NCCN, which is the I always forget the National Cancer Comprehensive Cancer. I always have to look at
my network.
The National Comprehensive Cancer Network. Now that organization is a nonprofit that has done an incredible job. I remember when they first started their pathways back in the day. I went to their first conference, and they have worked on gaining consensus by physicians nationwide and even international on treatment. Diagnostic and workups, the treatment options, surveillance, recurrence, and really helping to bring standardization on the cancer, how to approach cancer care. So I would definitely recommend the NCCN.
I know there's oncology centers that are NCCN certified. So to Ginger's point, if an advocate is working with a patient, mm-hmm. it would be good to get that patient, if they could, into an NCCN cancer center.
I think you're talking about the National Cancer Institute, the NCI,
the certification that cancer centers, the designation that cancer centers have.
Right, it's NCI, not the NCCN.
Okay.
Yeah, the NCCN is just an organization that has, they create the guidelines through consensus, and the NCI, the National Cancer Designated Certification, those are the centers that are, they receive governmental support. They also have accreditations. And then you have the cancer, the COC, which is the Commission on Cancer, that also does, for outpatients, they do a lot. And of course you have Anne's point is you really want to guide people to those type of centers where you're getting the best care and they're employing, a standardized approach to care.
So talk about some of the outcomes that you can point to show the value a person having a cancer nurse, cancer navigator can show. I know, like you said, you've been working on outcomes and trying to show the value that you and your team bring. So what are some of the things that you can point to that might people could understand?
Yeah, so I think one in particular is the time to treatment. I think that is a critical piece, and the system does not promote one, especially in the community setting. Let's take breast cancer again. It's been the top topic today. So breast cancer, you have a medical oncologist, you have a surgical oncologist, a radiation oncologist, and a plastic surgeon typically. So you have four different groups. Typically, if you have detection, it may be accidental. It could be through a mammogram. It could be on exam. And then you have the mammogram. And so that sets that whole trajectory, that cascade of services. So you go to a physician. If you're in a community setting, that surgeon may not be connected to the medical oncologist. It may not be connected to a radiation oncologist. So you have all these different people and all these different systems. So that takes time to go, and you're here as a new person. You know, it's like learning a whole different language. You're just kind of like going in a different foreign country with different language and different culture. And so trying to navigate that is virtually impossible for many. And you're beholden to the systems. So there's often care delays. It's such an issue that Medicare, and as one of their quality metrics for Medicare, they said if you have a type of cancer, breast cancer, ERPR positive, HER2 negative, that they got treated within 4 months. Within 4 months. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
I mean, that's horrific in my opinion. So if I, you know, I would, you know, I had breast cancer, so I knew how to navigate that journey. And it wasn't easy. Believe me, I ended up having to fire my surgeon because she didn't employ the guy that she wasn't following the guidelines. Thank God I had the ability to navigate that. And I have my own advocate helping me, guide me through that journey. But going back to the point is that what we do is that time to treatment, we know how to get into appointments. Our time to treatment or time to the appointments, the first appointment, is making sure that they have all their mammograms, all the medical records are to the physician where they're going to go. We get them in within five days to maybe, you know, a week and a half at the most. We're very successful in that. We arm them with the right questions to ask. The medical records are there, so there's no delays. We anticipate, we can even start, in being proactive and getting the tests that need to be done, making sure that everything is there so that the physician and the patient has the ability, the right information, and can have that communication and promote that relationship. Additionally, most often we will always recommend a second and maybe a third opinion, because no physician is the same. I'm sorry, they're just not. There, you go to five different, all you have to do is have a child with a chronic condition or something wrong, and you go to different doctors, you're gonna hear five different answers. And with cancer, it's no different. And it's really unfortunate, because it really is, how does one understand how that they're being told the right thing, right? I've had, and you asked about outcomes. Well, time to treatment has been a big one. You know, we had a case with the breast cancer case again, where she went to a cancer institute and was told that about 4 months, it was going to be for 3 to 4 months is her surgery. We ended up, she came to us, we got her into three different doctors, because she was a very analytical, very highly functioning person. She was also a single mom, and she wanted to make sure that she was doing the right thing for her daughter, right? Because she was by herself and working. And so she came to us, we got her the three different doctors. She was able to make her decision. She had the surgery within 6 weeks, and then was able to have her pathology was 0.4 millimeters away from stage three. So she was stage two. So if she had been a stage three, we would have saved, I mean, if we saved the through a validated study, we saved her company like estimated $50,000 because she didn't have to have treatment, chemotherapy. So it's those type of things that we're being creative, but we're looking at validated studies. We're not just kind of grabbing on straws. We want to make sure that we're using a validated approach to measuring our impact. And that's then
That's really important. And I think people don't realize time is of the essence. Mm-hmm. Like you say, time to treatment. You know how things seem to take such a long time. You know, the doctor wants you to have certain tests. By the time you get there scheduled, it could be a month mm-hmm. or 2 months.
Yeah.
And then, but if they're using an advocate, you might be able to get them scheduled in 2 weeks.
Oh, I get them done in 1 day.
Yeah, right.
We're making sure it's all about quality of life too, right? I mean, you don't, having a cancer diagnosis is so overwhelming. And then on top of it, if you're trying to work, if you're a younger person or if you're older, you don't have the mobility. I mean, there's a lot of different reasons. And so we're trying to get, you know, we get, if there's a PET scan and a bone scan, we try to get everything done in 1 day. So, or at least limit that amount of having to go back and forth and really trying to expedite it so we can make sure that they're getting the right care.
And I think Ginger, you and I are both general care managers, mm-hmm. but you can just hear by what Leanne's saying how specialized this is, cancer care. Mm-hmm. It is something that I know when I had my episode of cancer with brain cancer, I was useless. I didn't know what even to ask a question about. And I was very grateful to have two case managers who helped me get into an NCI cancer center because I was in a small hospital. And if I didn't have those people, I would have stayed at that small hospital. I would have had brain surgery at a small hospital. And I would have had chemotherapy by a general oncologist, not an oncologist who specialized in my tumor, if I would have stayed there, because that is just how the system is set up.
Right.
But I was able to get to a National Cancer Institute hospital, get a neurosurgeon who did the biopsy, and then referred me to an oncologist who specialized in that tumor type within a week, you know, and I didn't know to ask those questions, and I've been doing this for a long time. So all of us, we need, this is where specialty care comes in, I think. And the fact that you are really trying to measure your outcomes, I think is so important because we all need to do that today. You're right, we are a line item. We should be looked at as a cost saving center, mm-hmm. really, that people hire us to improve communication, improve care coordination, lower healthcare costs, whether it's the individual patient or their employer, whoever brings you in. You know, I know you have the different types of contracts mm-hmm. of how people can get to you. So maybe that's the next question. How would somebody get to, if they were diagnosed today or their family history was so strong that they were really worried? I'm a young woman, I want to have kids, but my mother, my grandmother, her mother all had ovarian cancer, and I know my risks are high. So I might want to get some of that genetic testing you talked about. How would somebody find you or know to call you to talk about this? And what are some of the options?
Right. So as far as the getting to us, we have a website, which is beaconadvocates.com. But as employers, they are able to, sorry, I had a client. So as far as with Beacon, our website is beaconadvocates.com, but we also have a phone number. Individuals, we have a Facebook page. We also have some, you know, Google, some reviews so people can, you know, research us, because we have had very good experience in a very difficult time, period of time in someone's life. We do have employers that can, you know, that hire us. We also have insurers that hire us. We have some very unique situations. We are about to get into a unique partnership and working on virtual coaching and cancer care. So there's a lot of different options there, but I would just implore folks to really, you know, if you're in the field of advocacy and case management, you know, I think this is the only thing that really drives me a little bit, makes me so concerned with the non-clinical folks in advocacy. I find it's challenging because I don't know if they know the right answer, the questions to ask, right? Or that there might be something. So, you know, certainly if there's a question, I'm happy to answer it. So please reach out. But it's so important because these are people's lives that you're handling.
So Leanne, can other advocates and care managers, you know, they don't necessarily want to turn their client over, but is it an option for them to contact you or somebody like you and have you consult on their case or work with them?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've done a lot of gratis type of work with other advocates, but, you know, I think as we get a little bit busier, we'll probably do discounted rate for other advocates when it's just like some consulting.
Or even like a consultation for mm-hmm. another advocate to let you come in and do an assessment and then decide together, maybe it would be good to turn this patient over to the cancer navigator, or the case manager may be able to handle it, but with some collaboration. And I think, you know, patients will understand that. That's what the value is of our working together, is to open our networks, that we have more collaboration with people who can help direct people. You know, we waste a lot of time in healthcare just finding the right people. And if we know who those people are. So my last question is, I know you're established in the industry, but are there other organizations like you out there?
Yeah, there are a couple. There are not many of us out there. I know that there's been a great interest among other oncology nurses to start it, but I would, I think it's important that you really need to have command of the system, right? You really need to have experience. So we only hire people that are 15 plus years of oncology experience certified, and they, you know, case manager is like a little icing on the cake. We need people that are really, that are curious, and they just are, and they have an insatiable appetite for knowledge. So they're not a lot of people that know the system and know how to navigate the system and insurance. You know, that's messy. Insurance is messy and billing's messy, and we help individuals with their we help individuals with their journey, right? So all aspects of it. And we have social workers, but we also will lean to other advocates that work in billing. I lean on a couple of those very, very heavily when I can't deal with that. I also have a very affinity for Triage Cancer, which is a phenomenal organization. They are they're cancer-based lawyers that started a nonprofit. So any type of, you know, question from a state perspective is really helpful. But also, you know, SSDI and Medicare, and they have courses for case managers. I would, you know, if you have that desire, I would absolutely encourage that. They're I think a 1 or 2 day course that they offer for free. And there's just, you know, there's a lot of people out there. So I like the fact that we are coming together more often than not. But there's a lot, it's getting busy in the space, and I just worry about the caliber of the services that are being offered. That's always been my worry. I want to encourage folks to do it, but
And I think understanding each of our own scope of practice is an important piece. So understanding that, and then using people who have the expertise to do the work even if it is giving a client up, it's worth that to give good care. So I think we'd have to think about that. But Ginger, any closing words from you at this point?
No, I want to thank Leanne for being here and sharing a little bit with us about her practice and her specialty area. And I think that's one of the things that I'm excited about MyCare Alliance being able to do. If you look at our national directory, all of our members are listed, Leanne's in there, and we can help connect with, you know, we do have the knowledge of some people are doing special practices. So even in that way, that we want to be a resource and help you be able to collaborate with one another.
Great. Yeah, I have an idea though too. One might be that we may have this type of setting with we open it up. One thing I did at a large organization is that we had an opening where people could type in like an IM. They could type their questions if they were you know, cancer or caregivers with cancer, dealing with cancer. And I think that would be very interesting too, right? Yeah. When they're dealing with stressors of different specialty areas, not just cancer, but I know I probably would, if there was something like that, that would be really useful.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah.
Leanne, okay. Any closing thought, Leanne?
No, I'm just grateful for the time with you two lovely ladies. I mean, you really, it's been, you know, as you can tell, I'm very passionate about what my world and what I'm doing in cancer. And, you know, I want to see change. I want to see the patient, things change into more of a personalized approach rather than people not getting the care and the coordination that they deserve. So yeah. I, you know, anything we can do to work together to make that happen, I'm all about. So
collaborating.
Yes.
I know we've all been able to work together over the years, and mm-hmm. I'm grateful for Ginger for the podcast opportunity to bring on guests like Leanne to showcase what advocates are doing in their different areas. And care managers, case managers, we call them helping professionals. So what all the helping professionals are doing to improve the delivery of care to the population of the world, mm-hmm. really, it's of the world. Mm-hmm. So thank you for your time, Leanne. Thank you, Ginger, for the opportunity to do this today. And we'll look forward to seeing everybody for the July podcast, which will be our next one.
All right.
So thank you so much for coming on today and have a good week.
All right.
Thanks.